Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAG for short, a housing group for older people run by old people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30pm on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
That's right, you're listening to Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Aged Action Group show here on 3CR, 8:55am. My name's Shane, I'm here with Fiona. How are you doing this week, Fiona?
I'm well, Shane, how are you?
Fantastic.
That's good. On today's show, we have an interview with Brian Lipman, OAM, the founder and recently departed CEO of...
Recently retired? Sounds terminal.
He's not terminal. He's still alive and kicking, I can assure you, of Wintringham, which is an organisation that works with older people who have experienced homelessness. So we'll go straight into that interview now.
All right. So first up, can you just tell us a bit about Wintringham? Like, what is Wintringham for people who don't know?
Well, Wintringham is a not-for-profit, non-religious organisation working exclusively with elderly people who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. We provide housing, aged care, community care, outreach work, advocacy, a whole range of stuff.
And how big is Wintringham?
It's bigger than most people think. We have now about 1,100 staff, have about 3,000 clients a night. Big change from the first year when I was the only worker. Everyone agreed with me in those days.
Maybe you could tell us, some people wouldn't have heard the origin story, I guess, of Wintringham, but maybe you could tell us where you were at and why you decided it was so important to set up a service for older people like you have with Wintringham.
Okay, well, I retrained from a previous life where I was a jackaroo and a slaughterman and stuff and became a social worker. I always tell a funny story that I'm probably the only slaughterman ever to become a social worker. My first job, I was in my 30s by that stage, middle 30s, was at Gordon House, which was the largest night shelter for homeless people in Australia. 300 beds, 10 floors, where Jeff Shedd is now. And I frankly loved it, to be honest. It was wild and chaotic. A lot of acts of wanton kindness, but terrible brutality and deaths and rapes. And so there was a whole range of stuff, but... it was exciting for a young fella, I suppose. But only really, the tragedy of it only really, really hit home when my parents got sick and frail and I had to get aged care for my mum particularly. And I was amazed and delighted how good aged care was in this country. I knew nothing about aged care and it was really good. But I couldn't get over the fact that I'd come back to work and I'd have guys who were far frailer and sicker than mum dying in this terrible place, and then I'd go to see mum and she'd have all this care. And so I thought, okay, well, I've got to get our guys out of the night shelter into aged care. And I really wasn't thinking wider than just Gordon House. It was just those group, that's people out of that 300, there's probably about 140 who were eligible for aged care. And I didn't make one successful placement. And Fiona, you know me for an awful long time. I don't give in easy, and I didn't make one placement. Mm. So all of the good church-based aged care services were cherry-picking, and they wouldn't take our homeless guys. So so in the impetuosity of youth, I said, okay, I'll build my own. And I had some wonderful help. Peter Hollingworth was a great source of assistance to me. Had to lobby hard with government for a long time. I think one of the catalysts for the change was certainly Peter Hollingworth, but also Peter Staples, who was the aged care minister, who really liked the idea of what I was trying to do, just for aged care for homeless people. But at the time, the bureaucrats were telling me, well-meaning, but telling me that there is a homeless service system. You should be, that's where you should be. Well, the homeless service system, as you probably know, is very, very small and very poorly funded, whereas aged care is, you know, now they're talking $40 billion. That's a big area. So I said, no, I've got to get into aged care. And I rephrased it. They were telling me our guys were homeless and aged. And I said, they're not homeless and aged. They're aged and homeless. Mm. And that's not semantics. That changes the whole paradigm. That means that you're aged, therefore you should be eligible for aged care. It doesn't matter whether you're aged and a war veteran or aged and Greek or aged and gay or whatever. You're aged. Mm. Therefore, you should have access to aged care. And that was the start of Wintringham, and it sort of grew pretty rapidly, largely because, well, it was a good business model. I don't think I've ever been much of a social worker, but I'm a reasonably good developer, social developer. And the other reason is that in classic business terminology, there was no competition.
Mm.
No one else was doing anything.
That's right.
Well, very little anyway.
And when was that you were setting it up?
It was set up in, we became a company in 1989. I argued that they should be 50 and above and not 65 at the time. And I did that for two reasons. One, I was only in my 30s and 50 seemed awfully old. It doesn't now. And the other one was the premature ageing, which is exactly the same argument that the Currys were using, that and true, that nothing ages you as much as life on the streets.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I've often been asked that, you know, running a company that's, what, $130 million turnover, it must be pretty stressful. And I said, it's not stressful. What's stressful would be a 60-year-old woman on the streets. Mm. That would be stressful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, that was a potted history.
And what's different, do you think, about Wintringham in terms of what you actually provide for older people and that lens of coming from, I guess, providing support to people that don't have any money is quite different to the mainstream aged care system. So how do you guys do it differently? Because you're also a housing provider too. So it's not a facility that we're talking about, it's a home.
And we've got 9 facilities now, aged care facilities, homes, and then we've got about 1,000 houses. Look, the fundamental difference, Fiona, is that, as you are well aware, because you know Wintringham very well, we have very limited access to family, very, very limited. And frankly, sometimes when you do have access to them, it can be a bit problematic, but... So that's the fundamental thing. And the second thing is they've got no money. So everything Wintringham does really is on the shoestring because we don't have the resources of money. But the other thing is that because we don't have access to family and often friends, we put an enormous amount of effort into recreation or lifestyle, whatever you want to do. And again, I'll use my mum as an example. When my mum was in aged care, my hand was in my pocket all the time. I mean, happily, but you're always paying out for something, right? A small example, when she had to go to the dentist, she had dementia. I had to take her to the dentist, help her get dressed, took her in the car, calmed her down while this strange man put his hand in her mouth. By the time she got back to the home, she was a wreck, and I had to sit with her for a few hours until she fell asleep. So that was a day out of my life, which is fine. But at Wintringham, I've got to pay someone to do that because they don't have a son or a daughter to do that. So it's terribly important, the recreation side, and we spend every cent on that. The recent Royal Commission, the commissioner asked me, if you were for profit, what would be the difference? And I said, I'd sack my rec workers.
Mm.
That's where all the money goes.
Yeah.
And the other great problem is that, and this is a continuing problem from day one and it will go on forever, is that the aged care system was designed for my mum. Middle-class woman, knew her rights, family, daughters, aggressively advocating, and in my case it was me doing it.
Mm.
And the whole funding thing is geared around all of that. So when you're calling someone who has no family, no supports, is frightened, has had a terrible life, won't complain. It's very difficult to make those figures work, but somehow or other we've coped. But it's not easy.
And you've really advocated strongly to the government, and I've seen you do it, you're a master of it, to be able to advocate for a supplement to support that in the system, but also the 50-plus eligibility. Both of those two things have been really key part of your advocacy work. Do you think going forward that's embedded enough through your work that we're not going to lose those two really important things, or do you think they perhaps might be under threat?
Well, I think one's already gone.
Mm.
So, no, they're continually under threat. You see, you've really got to understand what Wintringham is trying to do, and that takes a long time. You need a very receptive ear to be able to explain it. Like, I mean, even in Haag's case, it took them years to really understand what Wintringham was on about, that we weren't actually in competition, we were actually colleagues.
Mm.
And that's very difficult for governments to really get their head around, so they always revert back to the mainstream. That's where all the lobbying is, and we might work hard at it, but we, compared to the massive lobbying efforts, the aged care industry and the nurses' union, everyone else, we're a very small fry, so it'll always be terribly difficult. Yeah, I think with the booming numbers of elderly people needing housing, and therefore as they get older they'll need aged care, it's more and more of a problem. I think this is one of the other things that I've always talked to Haag about over the years, is that every aged person needs aged care, every single one. Maybe only for 1 minute before they die. But everyone will need it at some stage. It's unlike, you don't need aged care now. No, I don't. But if you're aged and frail, sooner or later, you will need it. And that's, the answer is not just housing. The answer has to be supported housing in some way. And whether that support is a full nursing home or palliative care, or whether it's just coming into your unit and seeing if everything's okay, nevertheless, you must have some form of support to make it, to have a good end to your life.
So I'm interested in hearing about your perspective on what's changed in this space in the last, you know, decades that you've been involved in older people's housing and aged care stuff. Like, what's changed for the better and what's changed for the worse?
I don't think anything's changed for the better.
Typically optimistic and cheerful.
I'd be curious to know what you thought had changed for the better. Anyway, for the worse, it's the booming population of aged homeless people. I can remember many years ago when, after pleading with the politician, I was talking about the tsunami of aged people about to hit, and he said, "When do you think they'll be here, Brian?" And I said, "They're here, mate. The tsunami is here."
Mm.
And it's not the fault. It's really important for listeners to, well, not necessarily agree with me, but to be aware of my view. It's not the fault of this government. It's not the fault of the last government. It's the fault of 40 years of lack of housing support for older people.
Mm.
It's gone on and on and on, and now it's a crisis. You know, that crisis could have popped out under any administration. And now it's very, very difficult to heal. Very, very difficult.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's the big change. Just the, I was struck by sometimes these little stories, they really, I spend a lot of time with our clients, and so you end up probably getting more stories than you would if you were just locked away in your room. And this was a carer, actually, who'd been with me for at least 15, maybe 20 years. Terrific, salt of the earth, wonderful woman. And she said one day, we were just yakking away, she said, I'll be one of your clients soon, Brian. And I said, why? Why? She said, well, I'm going to retire soon and I won't be able to afford my housing. So here's a woman who is good, salt of the earth, worked hard, raised a family, lives alone, got a pretty tough job. She's getting older and frailer, harder and harder to do the job, recognising sooner or later she's going to have to stop, and then worrying that she won't be able to pay the rent.
Mm.
That's the story in a microcosm of what you guys are facing all along, and what we are too.
Mm.
There's people who have never... I mean, when I started Wintringham, I was working for those tough, gnarled people you see on the streets, you know, those tough guys, you know, the long beards and, you know. Now, we still do that. But there's so many people that just have had an ordinary life and just fallen on hard times. And of course, everyone talks about the boom in elderly women, and that's true. Still, shouldn't forget the fact that there's still more men out there doing it, but experiencing it. But so many people, and let's stick with the women, no super, little supports, renting. They're marginalised. And my experience of doing this for 40 years is the percentage of people who are marginalised become homeless.
Yeah, yeah. You've talked a little bit about the aged care system, but I think one of the unique things about Wintringham and Hag, I guess, is that we sort of sit between the housing system and the aged care system. What do you think are some of the challenges around that? Because obviously they're in different portfolios, there's federal and state, there's a whole lot of things there, and quite often you'll not have a nice, neat place where you fit when you're sort of, I guess, disrupting those two systems. Do you have any reflections about the challenges of that?
Well, I do. I mean, it's very difficult to talk about how government should be reformed on this, but I think as organisations we can do a lot better. It doesn't happen now under your regime, but there was certainly a long time when Haag and Wintringham were seen to be enemies, not enemies, but opposite. But really, it was crazy. I could never work it out because we're both doing the same thing. It's just that your focus was on housing, and I understood that, and mine was probably a wider one because of aged care. But we're still a housing provider. But really, it's such a hard question to answer. There has to be much, and maybe the increasing numbers of elderly people experiencing homelessness or housing stress will help governments to look at this more constructively. I have advocated for more than 30 years that aged care should have a housing arm.
Mm.
And we got really close to it once. But it dropped off, and now that there isn't one. And I think housing, aged care has got to have a look at that area. We have to stop the recruitment into aged care or delay it. The Swedes have I travelled there once, and they talked about compression morbidity, which I had no idea what that meant. But what it really means is that they try to compress the bad years into a few years. Mm. Not that you have 20 years of bad health and then die, that you have good health right up to your, I don't know, let's say 85, and then the last couple, that's not too good. And we've got to try and stop the continual recruitment into aged care. If you had good housing and good supports, particularly community-based supports, you would stop the recruitment into full-time aged care. Now, these aged care beds are very expensive. You know, only about $400,000 a bed, you know, more in some cases.
Yeah.
And so it's fully funded by bonds, right? So if your clients don't have bonds, and a lot of Haag people don't, and all Wintringham people don't, how does an organisation build?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I've built 9. I mean, I wouldn't want to try anymore. Try now. It's so hard to get. These are serious dollars. This is not can-rattling dollars. This is serious dollars. If you want to build a 60-bed place, you know, you're talking about, and then get land, you're talking well over $30
million. Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. And you also have taken over places like independent living units and things like that and turned them into pretty nicely designed housing that people want to live in, and then you get the supports in, so you get the home care and the personal care. So what's that process been like? Because we often get people calling us, not often, but we get people calling us who are either living in those sorts of housing or are running them and saying, there's no money in this. What are we going to do? We don't want to turf out our residents, but it doesn't fit neatly into the housing system either because they're not community housing providers. So how have you gone about supporting people in that type of independent housing?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult. We have accessed money for housing from government and rebuilt a lot of units. We took over a philanthropic trust and the Miller Trust, and were able fortuitously to do that at the time of the Rudd big spend, and that was able to renovate something like $34 million worth of housing. We're still doing that a little bit. I think to show you how difficult it is, Fiona, if you look at our competitors, if you like, for want of a better word, the housing associations, they're huge, right? They're huge. And we're very still relatively small. Now, the reason for that is that they borrow and we don't. Now, in my long distance past, I actually was an economist. And I can tell you that I'm not frightened of debt, but I can't service a debt and work in homelessness. If you went out and bought a $5 million house, the banks would say, have you changed jobs, Fiona? Because how are you going to service the debt? Well, it's just the same in welfare. If I take on, as some of these organisations, $100, $150, $200 million worth of debt, I've got to make a surplus to pay for that debt or sell off stuff along the way. And neither of those two things I was prepared to do. So our growth has been limited, and governments at various times have been pretty angry with us because they want us to go into debt so we can grow. But to do that, I can't do homelessness. And I set up Wintry M for homelessness. I didn't set up Wintry M to become big.
Mm.
It has become big, but that was not the intention. So it is a big problem. And look, I mean, housing, for-profit housing providers are also struggling to build housing that's affordable. I mean, I saw in the paper a few days ago, a very well-known organisation has changed its plans because, well, clearly I'm not aware of it. I haven't spoken to them, but they can't make the figures stand up. That must be the only reason.
Mm.
So that's the ongoing problem.
Yeah.
We find money for wars very easily, but we don't find money for housing as easily.
Hmm.
Yeah, isn't that the way?
Yeah.
There's heaps more that we could talk about, but we're just about out of time for today. Is there anything that you want to say to our listeners just by way of finishing up?
No, I think Hags are really... You're not asking me to say this, but I have a lot of respect for Hag over a long, long period and its workers. No, you just got to keep fighting that fight. There is no silver bullet. I think as long as organisations like Wintry Ham and Haag and a few others, I suppose, stay true to its mission, there is hope. But there are so many, aged care is a perfect example, there are so many aged care providers that started off in homelessness and now they wouldn't know a homeless person if they were into it. Because slowly, bit by bit, the dollars don't stack up. You know, I've often said that if I moved to another mainstream aged care provider and went to my board and said I want to set up housing for homeless people, they'd probably show me the door because there's no money in it.
Yeah.
So that's the great problem. So as long as organisations like ours hold the line and keep on arguing, I think one of the things that, and you would have noticed this over the years, that there's swings and slides in politics, ups and downs. We're going through a really tough time at the moment, and NDIS is a perfect example. But maybe it will change, and it won't change unless we keep lobbying, and when it does change, we have to be there to take advantage of it. That's a really important thing. We have to be there.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your insights, Brian. You are a bit of a legend. I do have one more question. I wonder if we've got time for it. We probably do. You've been nominated for a bunch of awards recently. You got nominated for, you won Victorian Senior of the Award, then you got nominated for Australian Senior of the Year as well. And I think you're a Order of Australia Medal as well. Are awards important? What's your view on awards? Coming from, as you have, like a fighter from the grassroots, do you think these sorts of acknowledgements are important, or are you a bit like, what's your view?
Humility says that they're not important, but they are. Clearly, they open doors.
Yeah.
I mean, people open doors because of controversy, and you guys are very good at that, lobbying hard, or they open doors because a minister happens to be interested, or they open doors because the Governor General says, you should talk to this bloke. So who knows?
But the networking side of things.
Yeah, they're all that. It's they're and I'm like you. They're awkward to accept, but they quietly you think that's pretty nice.
Yeah, nice acknowledgement of a life's work.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Brian. And we'll definitely be keeping an eye on what you get up to next. I'm sure you're not quite done yet with changing the world. So, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks.
At my age, preparation is just part of life. To prepare for viruses like influenza and COVID, I get vaccinated regularly. Viruses are always changing. That's why vaccination really matters to protect yourself against serious disease and hospitalization. And the risks go up when you turn 65. Vaccination is the best preparation. Speak to your health professional and book your vaccinations today. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
A 3CR
Do you care about older people's housing? Are you keen to talk to politicians and your community about why housing for older people is important?
Then become a housing champion with Housing for the Age Action Group. The Housing Champions program will train older people to talk about housing leading up to the Victorian election in November this year. For more information and to register your interest, go to Housing for the Age Action Group's website, oldertenants.org.au, or call us on 03 9654
7389. A 3CR supporter.
You've been listening to Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Age Action Group show, on 3CR at 5am. We're just about out of time, but before we go, we'd like to give out some contact information so that if you're an older person in Victoria with a housing issue and you want to talk to someone about it, or you want to get involved in some of our policy and lobbying work like Brian was talking about, or some of our working groups, things like that, you can give us a call on 9654 7389. That's 9654 7389. Or if you are calling because you've got a housing issue yourself that you want some help with, probably better to call on 1300 765 178. That's 1300 765 178. Fiona.
Yes.
What song are we going to hear to take us out?
We are going to hear a song by the Orb Weavers, which is called, let me just see what it's called. It is called The Other Side. So, yeah, we'll go out with that now.
Beautiful.
Start of May, sun turns your sap away. Soft wood shedding spine, you'll take me to the other side, to the other side. This is the first I ever knew. No spring child, just a season twice removed. Millipedes and fallen fruit. Snails reach silver tracks of food. Silver mask of